Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You were tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/MaxineThompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here is your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Welcome to Dr. Maxine Thompson Show of MaxineThompson.com and MaxineThompsonBooks.com. As you know, I'm the author of novels The Ebony Tree, Hostage of Lies, L.A. Blues, and others. You can find my novels, short story collection, and anthologies online and at most national bookstores. Tonight's guest is Sheila Goss. Sheila M. Goss is the Essence Magazine and Black Expressions Book Club bestselling author of Delilah, My Invisible Husband, Roses Are Thorn, Pages Web, Double Platinum, His Invisible Wife, Hollywood Deception, and Savannah's Curse, as well as four titles in the teen series, The Lip Gloss Chronicles, namely The Ultimate Test, Splitsville, Paper Thin, and Secrets Untold. Ruthless is her 13th novel and second Christian fiction novel. Besides writing fiction, Sheila is a freelance writer. She is also the recipient of Three Shades of Romance Magazine Reader's Choice Multicultural Awards and is honored in Literary Divas, the top 100 most admired African-American women in literature. Good evening. How are you doing, Sheila?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dr. Maxine?
Oh, great. Doesn't it sound funny to see how your accolades and how your lists have grown just in the last 3 years, the number of books that you have now?
I'm like, who is she talking about?
Yeah, this isn't really all the books, because you got a lot of e-books that you put out this last year. You published about 8 e-books this year, didn't you?
Yeah, that's correct, about 8 e-books.
Wow. Well, tell the audience about yourself and your books.
Well, as you mentioned, I do have those 13 books out. And one of Delilah was nominated for, is a finalist in the Emmy Awards. And that's a real good thing for me because I've never, ever been nominated for an Emmy Awards. So to make it to the finalist is an honor. Indeed. Okay. Ruthless was reviewed in USA Today, so I'm very excited about that as well. And as you mentioned, my e-book, VIP, The Bad Twin, Tasha's Invisible Man, Mrs. America, The Candy Shop, and other love bites. And my most popular one is Love Unexpected, because it's been a top 100 Amazon bestseller for over a year now. And also I have a collaboration that I did with a suspense romance novel called Unauthorized for John Wooden. So I've actually had real fun doing my e-books. It's gotten more exposure, and thus I think it's also helped me with my paperback and hardcover sales. So.
Yes, and congratulations on the two, on being on the USA Today, that they had the book review, and that was a very favorable book review they had on Ruthless, too. And the other award, what's the name of that award again?
I'm an Emmy Award finalist for Delilah in the Inspirational Romance category, and like I said, it's actually one of the highest, actually probably one of the very few awards for a black romance writer, and the highest that you can get as a black romance writer. So I'm very honored to just to be nominated and to make it as a finalist.
Yeah, so I say that's good. Once you start winning awards, you start getting more recognition, too. And so that's all that is just building your resume, and it's building a whole lot of following. It's building your platform. I was reading Jay Conrad's blog and he was talking about bestsellers, but he said, you know, even if you can pay $150 on some of your bills a month from your writing, that's a success. A lot of us, he said, you know, he's given out his numbers, and, you know, like he sold 100,000 at Christmas, but this has been years of him building that audience. It hasn't just been an overnight thing that he's gotten that many people to buy his books, and most of these were on Amazon, and he was already kind of positioned himself for that sale, and that's what you've been doing with this last year, putting up the 8 e-books. You're kind of positioning yourself that one day you'll be seeing that type of sales. I read where one of the top sellers on the USA Today, he was an e-book self-published writer, and he had sold $300,000 worth of books on Amazon alone, just e-books. I mean, the possibility is there, but it starts with the small checks. A lot of writers want to jump big. Hello? Hello?
Now back to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Sheila, let's talk about, my guest is Sheila Goss, author of 13 titles and about 8 more e-books. But we're talking about her latest paperback book, Roofless. which just won an award or a nomination. Sheila, let's talk about Ruthless. Give us a brief synopsis.
Okay, well, correction. It was Delilah that won the nomination
for
the Emmy Award, but Ruthless got a review in the USA Today. And Ruthless is it's not a follow-up to Delilah. However, if people read Delilah and want to know what happened to Delilah, the answer to it is in between the pages of Ruthless. And Ruthless is what I consider my second book in my Notorious Women of the Bible series. And the story of Bathsheba and David, and it's a modern-day twist to the biblical story. And the characters are Bathsheba and Uriah Richards. They've been happily married for about 10 years. Uriah's boss is David King, who's a media magnate, who's wealthy and powerful, and which he loves, of course, all of that, but he loves God as well. But when he lays eyes on Bathsheba, he's immediately smitten with her. And so he has to pray to resist the temptation because he knows Bathsheba is another man's wife. And if you read the story, and if you've read the original story from the Bible, then you already know that Sheba also succumbs to David's advances. But in my story, she tries her best to resist. But, of course, as you know, because I try to stay true to the real story, she does succumb to him. But only thing happens is things kind of get complicated. It's a lot of drama going on. A few surprises show up. And everybody be kind of surprised to find out, you know, what happened to Delilah and what her relationship is to Sheba. So that's the gist of the story. And it deals with a lot of, you know, personal temptations, your relationship with God, redemption because David falls and he sins, and he has to go to God and ask for forgiveness. Like when we sin, that's what we should all do. So that's Ruthless in a nutshell.
Okay, well, do you have your book with you, Sheila, where you could read a short excerpt from it?
Sure. I'll read the prologue and the first couple of pages from chapter one. And when I just kind of give you an overview. In the real story, we all know how David saw that she was taking a bath. And I'm like, how can I capture that in my fictional story? And so this is how I came up with the prologue. David King used the barred hotel key and rushed into the carpet suite of Uriah Richards, his employee, to retrieve his forgotten cell phone. While meeting with Uriah to discuss a business proposition, David had absentmindedly laid the phone down and had forgotten it. He thought of it only when he needed to make a phone call. "There it is," he said out loud as he picked up his iPhone from the coffee table and placed it in his black tuxedo jacket pocket. His bladder needed relief, so he decided to make a pit stop in the bathroom before returning downstairs to the DM King Media annual corporate party. The sound of the shower caused him to pause. The bathroom door was ajar, and he could see the silhouette of a woman's body as she showered. David knew he should have turned around and made a quick exit when he heard the shower, but his feet were planted in one spot. His mind wouldn't will him to move. He watched as the water slid down her flawless chestnut brown skin. David was not a peeping Tom, but her hourglass figure held him captive. He observed from a distance as she exited the shower and dried off with a white fluffy towel. David had been all over the world, but never had he seen a woman as beautiful as the one whom he now laid eyes upon. Her radiant jet black hair cascaded down her back and accented her perfectly oval face. She seemed unaware that she had an audience as she sprayed on perfume. The sound of the hotel phone ringing broke David's trance. He slid out of the hotel suite without the mystery woman ever knowing she had company. And then I'm just going to kind of fast forward a little in chapter one when Bathsheba makes her entrance to the ballroom. Let's see. So Sheba, dressed in a floor-length silver gown with a slit cascaded into the hotel ballroom as if she was the queen of the ball. Mina went and stared at her as she stopped to scan the room in search of her husband. She was aware of her natural beauty, so she automatically ignored their glances. She noticed a hand waving in the air. It was Uri. She walked in his direction. The foot moved to the rhythm of her pace and showed her well-toned legs as she walked. The man standing with Uri turned around to face her. His eyes seemed to peer straight through her. Since he was a public figure, she recognized him immediately. He was the well-known David King, the CEO of DM King Media and Uri's new boss. She flashed her 1,000-kilowatt smile and graciously walked up to where Uri and David stood. Uri reached his hand out for her, and she grabbed it. He kissed her on the cheek. Not once did she take her eyes off David. She could see why women flocked to David. He was a very attractive man. He stood at least 6 feet tall and had brown shoulders and naturally wavy brownish red hair. He was what her friends would call a pretty boy. Mr. King, I want you to meet my beautiful wife, Bathsheba. Uri smiled as he made the introduction. Sheba held her hand out to David. Call me Sheba. It's nice to meet you. David's hand seemed to hold on to hers longer than necessary. The pleasure is all mine. Without taking his eyes off Sheba, David said, Uri, you didn't tell me you were married to a model. Sheba continued to smile. She was never one to be bashful, but something about David made her feel a little uneasy. You're too kind, Mr. King, Sheba said. It's David, and I'm telling you the truth. He winked his eyes. So that's how they, you know, met, and that's how David saw her taking a bath. So it took me, once I was able to get that particular scene together in my head, then I was able to write the rest of the story.
Well, I thought that was just a great idea to retell some of the stories in the Bible from the woman's point of view. They had a New York Times bestseller called The Red Tent, where that's what they did. Because you really mainly see the men's point of view in the Bible story. So this is good that you're showing the woman's side, because I always wonder what happened to Bathsheba. This is a good modern-day cautionary tale of that type of story. Sheba, and let's talk about the couple. Sheba and Uri seemed to disagree about her spending habits. She had her own job, so do you think it was fair, Uri, to make a big deal about her shopping?
Okay, but I don't want to discuss too, because a lot of people still, the book just came out, so a lot of people still haven't read it.
I won't ask too many questions from the
book. But I will discuss, that is one of the things that her, you know, because other than that, they actually have, a perfect relationship, basically. She loved her husband, and he loved her, but they had that one, I don't care how perfect a relationship, that's just like in real life, I don't care how perfect a relationship is, there's always going to be something that you and your mate are going to disagree on, it's basically how you deal with that is what's going to determine whether or not your relationship, you know, succeeds or fails.
That's true, and two people, you know, relationships would be easy if it was just one person, but it's two people with two different backgrounds, two different upbringings, and even I saw one where psychologists say that when a couple is in bed, they're in bed with their parents, so that's like four other people because they've been influenced by how their parents' marriage, if their parents were married, or if it's a single parent, you know. They have all these different agendas and different backgrounds, and that's why we see the divorce rate is 51% or more. And then it's not helping either with the economy. And I'm kind of glad how you worked in some of the things that are going on currently in the world and current events, too, into your story. But what inspired this story?
What inspired it is I write in so many different genres, as you know, and I feel like the talent that I have came from God. So this was one of my ways of just basically using my God-given talent to kind of give back and try to reach out to people and to draw them into reading their Bibles more and hopefully, you know, helping them continue their relationship with God if they already have one. Those who kind of strayed a little, maybe getting them back, you know, and so that they can, you know, just, you know, try to build a relationship with God if they don't already have a relationship with God. And God only wants us, what he wants us is to come talk to him. And that's what praying is. You're talking to him. He already knows what's going on in our lives. He's just waiting on us to come to him. And so I decided to do and I took the women because a lot of times as people, we We always want to blame somebody else for what went wrong or why I'm in this trouble. Like, for instance, Samson and Delilah. Samson knew Delilah was planning certain things, but he, you know, still succumbed to her beauty. And, he, you know, in the end, it wasn't Delilah's fault that he did. He was a man. He should have been stronger. He had an option to either succumb to her beauty or not, and he chose not. He chose to do so, which was his downfall. And the same thing with David and Bathsheba. It looks like, you know, David's getting away with taking another man's wife. I mean, not only did he take his wife, he actually sent a man to the front line to get killed. But you have to read Ruthless to find out how David does it in this, you know, particular modern day tale of David and Bathsheba. So, you know, David was wrong on all accounts. And if you continue to read on, if you go read the real story from the Bible, 2 Samuel, you will see all the different things that David had to go through after, you know, him and Bathsheba had, you know, had their fifth child together, because David already had some other kids. And the fact that one of your children turned on you, that has to be very devastating to a parent. So anyway, I did this story, and I have other stories that I want to do in my Notorious Women of the Bible series, but I won't mention them right now because they're not on the contract. But my whole purpose of writing the series is to show that each one of us is accountable for the things that we do. We cannot blame the next person for our actions. So just because you step on my toe, if I react, it's still not your fault. It's, you know, I'm still held accountable for what I do, even though you're the one that stepped on my toe.
And what I always think of when I think of David, I know he was God's anointed. You know, he was so highly favored, and that he failed. But then, you know, and he paid dearly for it through Absalom, who came after him to kill him. And, I mean, he just really went through a lot. And, you know, the child. And so it is to let you know that I always say, well, Jehovah will forgive, but you're going to pay.
Right, and it's just
like there is a consequence for choices.
Yeah, for every action, there is a consequence for your actions, whether it be good or bad. So it really, I want people to stop and think before they react.
Right, and you want as fewer regrets in your later life about choices you made. Sometimes you have to make some hard choices, but when you kind of take the high road, you never have as many regrets. I was using this example with my son last night, and I told him, you know, when you don't have the regret, certain, you know, as all parents, I have things I wish I had done different, but the way they can come to me and ask me questions, and they'll come to me, and I know a lot of it has to do with some things that happened at the time I thought was unfair for me, and I didn't do what I really wanted to do, and I put them first. But I'm glad I did, because I know a lot of women who now, they're back in the church, but they did a lot of things in front of their children, you know, a lot of dating, a lot of men spending the night, and all this type of thing, and then they can't tell them nothing, you know, and one I just buried. And that was kind of that same type of situation. Yeah, now the mother back in church, but she did a lot of things during the crucial and the formative years of that young woman's life, and that young woman, you know, was out there on the fast lane because that's what she saw in her formative years. And then when she tried to tell her things, she couldn't tell her anything from about 13 on. She couldn't tell her anything because she had seen too much. So you cannot, one of the main things parents, that's the advice I would give to any parent, always try to maintain the respect of your children. And that's what David lost and what he did too. And, you know, I mean, you're going to make mistakes, and children are going to blame the mother for everything, anything from the sky.
But then also, though, we can't, I mean, as adults, in terms of time, but we got to stop blaming mom and dad and grandpa or whoever for something, because you're an adult at this point. So now it's time for the person to take responsibility for their own actions. Yeah, mama might have been bringing all these men to the house. Daddy might have been an alcoholic, or he might have been doing this and cheating on your mom.
Or a drug dealer, anything.
Or what have you, but that was them. It shouldn't be
you. You got to choose your own life. You got to say, I'm going to create my own life.
Right. If you do decide to do all those things, you can't blame them because you still have a choice whether to do that. And if you know that they cause certain problems, then that should motivate the person not to want to do that. It should want to motivate them to be a better person.
A better parent. A lot of children who were raised in foster care, they turn out to be some of the best parents. Or children who didn't have good parents, they turn out to be. So it could go both ways. I'm working on a book where the girl had the best of parents, and she was more influenced by the peers in the streets.
Right, you can
serve a long sentence. So you know, it depends on the person. But the one thing I do know as a parent is a really good thing when you can stand before your children and tell them, so you try not to have too many regrets. While your kids are still young, put them first. Don't try to put, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm grown, this is my house, I'm going to do what I want, I'm going to smoke weed in front of them, I'm going to do this and that. So, you know, try to have a certain amount of respect and give children a childhood, because a lot of times parents are taking their kids' childhood with all that stuff. And so I was just thinking in this book that that same principle applied, that, you know, that they made mistakes that they end up paying kind of dearly for. Just fortunately, in the book version, he didn't have any children, right?
Yes, other children. However, I don't, because David's story is a very long story, and I actually can write another story behind Rufus to capture all the other stuff he had going on, but I chose to only focus on David and Bathsheba's life.
Right. Yeah, you did have a very similar life to modern people. I wonder if we have any emails. Do we have any emails?
Yeah, right now we have one email. Let me go ahead and read it for you. It says, what brainstorming techniques do you use, and how do you create something from nothing? And this is from Gracie in Minnesota.
Hi, Gracie from Minnesota. Well, that's a very good question. A lot of my ideas come to me when I'm sleeping, and I have to make sure when I wake up I write them down, because if I don't, I will lose them. The concept, like once I came up with the concept of the notorious women of the Bible, I just basically, because I have been studying different women of the Bible anyway, and so it was just kind of narrowing down, okay, which one I want to write about. And Delilah was like the first one, Samson and Delilah. I thought, oh, I got to write Samson and Delilah. And then the next one was, oh, because I've always loved David's story. And I'm like, oh, I got to, you know, so David and Bathsheba. And then the next, you know, and then I have others afterwards. And just recently, like the last couple of months in Sunday school, we were studying Abraham and Sarah. And so I guess I might as well tell you, yes, I'm going to write Abraham and Sarah's story. And it was like, because it's just so fascinating how, even though the stories, you know, they're real and they're from a different time frame, they're still relevant today. Some of the things that they were going through, some of the things that they were dealing with, some of the issues they were dealing with, it's still relevant today. And the examples and the lessons that, you know, that are there, we can still use those lessons so we don't have to repeat those things. So that's basically how I brainstorm my Notorious Women of the Bible series. Is I had already been studying the women and the men that I've been, you know, writing about. And so that part wasn't hard. But that's how I did that. And once I just, you know, got that story and the characters, because I have to kind of look at them as characters, because even though they're real, I still have to look at them as characters because I'm writing a fictional story. So I'm able to embellish a little bit because it is, you know, even though it's based on true facts, it's still fiction, and I can bring it to modern-day times so I can put my little twist in there, like with Delilah. In the real story, nobody knows what happened to Delilah, so I could use Delilah as my one of those characters that people kind of love to hate, so I can use Delilah in many more stories to come, hint, hint. So she's going to be kind of like that character where you may see her again, you know, and then again you may not, but... So, the best ideas come to me when I'm sleeping.
All right, and if we get any more emails during the interview, I'll go ahead and butt in and let you know. And for all the listeners, Go ahead and email your questions to dj@artistfirst.com, letter D, letter J at artistfirst.com. And once I receive those, I'll go ahead and read those over the air. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Corey. And thanks for that email. That was really good. Sheila, since the listeners want to know how you're such a prolific writer, I know when I wrote L.A. Blues, too, I got a lot of points from you because I had never really just did one of those marathons. And I've seen you do them in a week or 2 weeks where your book was due and you get it done, too. So let's talk about some tips for writing fast to get your story down, how you've managed to do that. And this last year, you've done about 7 or 8 books.
Well, the best way to do that is, like I tell, because I teach workshops, is you have to know your character. And I have a character sheet that I go and I fill out for all my main characters. And it's not just basic stuff like hair color, skin color, you know, race or whatever. It's not. It gets a little bit deeper. What makes them tick? You know, what is their driving force? What makes them angry? And, you know, how is their relationship with their parents or siblings or were they adopted or, you know, just different, you know, different things like that. So you get to know that character like the back of your hand. And once I know my characters and I know my story in my head, if I can run my story from the beginning to the end in my head like a movie, I can sit down and write it. So that's how when I get a deadline, oh, we need it in, you know, 2 weeks, I can sit down and write it in 2 weeks. But that's the first draft. And then I go through, and it might take me a week to write it. And then I go back through, and I change some stuff around. If it doesn't fit, I kick it out. Or I may scrap, like, you know, one book that I wrote it in third person, and the editor said it sounded better in first person. And, you know, the thing about it is I have a problem changing the first person because when I was getting ready to write the story, I was debating with myself, should I write in first person, should I write in third? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I went third person, but I should have followed my first mind and went with the first person in the first place. But anyway, so that's how I'm able to do that because I know my characters like the back of my hand and I know my story. Even though how I wanted to end, even though some of the stuff in between, I may not know, because I write, my chapters are like scenes in a movie. And so when I'm writing, the character is writing their story, not Sheila, because you got to take yourself out of it. This is not Sheila's story when I'm writing, it's the character's story. So I let them dictate what's going on, like things going on around them, the conflicts going on around them, and that's how I'm able to write the first draft in a short period of time. Because if it's Sheila, if I put myself in it, Sheila wouldn't do that, you know. And so that would take me forever to write the story if it was Sheila. But I allow myself to become my characters when I'm typing and writing.
And then the difference in third person and first person, I just wrote an evaluation for this writer, and I told him that Celestine, he was a publisher, writer, and an editor. And his book I'm writing, he had said, and I studied this book about 7 years ago, and he said that first person is the most advanced point of view. And if you think about some of the lasting books, David Copperfield, To Kill a Mockingbird, a lot of those books were written in first person. And when I was younger, I didn't really appreciate first person, but now I love first person because you really can get a flavor. And I think when you changed that last book, since it was young adult, you really felt sorry, A Color Purple, and your books dealt with similar issues that was in Color Purple. So I think when you took it from first person, a third person to first person, you got closer to the character and you felt her vulnerability and you felt like a young person. Whereas when you were in third person, there was a distance between you and the reader. So I think that you did a good thing, and you're right, follow your first mind, because if your first mind is said to write it in first person, you were right. Have you written any other of your books in first person?
Yes, all my young adult books are written in first person. Okay. My e-book, The Bad Plan by the Twin Sisters, it's actually written, it's a combination of first and third. So, I think Terry McMillan did that with A Day Late, A Dollar Short. I'm trying to remember. but I've seen it done before. And so, you know, you're not really supposed to mix, but sometimes, you know, I guess you can, but you're not really supposed to. But, you know, sometimes you kind of push the envelope, and I kind of did it with that book.
Oh, you had third person and first person. Waiting to Excel, Terry McMillan's book was in first person and third person. That's the
right,
first
and that's
time
why I learned that technique from her. But that's not the norm. You're either going to do it in first or you're going to do it in third. You normally don't do it in both.
All right. And I think what you were doing different, well, I think in your other ones, you had, of the three girls in your first young adult series, you had each one carry the whole story. You saw from the three different girlfriends, one time it was one girl you focused on. But in this one, it seemed like by just being this one character, she's carrying this whole story. And I found, for me, L.A. Blues was harder to write because I generally had six point of view characters or a minimum of four. And to just have one person relate that whole story and keep it interesting, it was really hard. It's a lot harder to do one. Did you have difficulty with Sade's Secret?
Well, see, the Lookalikes Chronicles, like you said, was one. It was called that book. I didn't really have difficulty with that book, but with this one, it was challenging because of the subject matter. And Sade's Secret, which is the first book in the Sweet 16 Diaries under my pen name Sparkle, for those listening, it was challenging because I wanted to also show the mother's point of view and why she did the things that she did. And so, like you said, it was better for this book to be told in first person because it did get you into the mindset of that character. And that way you wouldn't feel like you were kind of left out. And so it was difficult because, you know, in this book I'm switching from a teenager, I'm going to think like a teenager and then speaking like an adult, you know, going back and forth. So then, you know, one chapter was from Sade's point of view and her mother's name is Joyce. And the next chapter was from Joyce's point of view. But it was all still in first person. So that's where the challenge came into.
And I thought that was good, particularly since you don't have children yourself. But I know you said that you work with a lot of teenagers, and that has helped you pick up that teenage voice, because you did a great job in that story, too.
And
it's more controversial. That's the other stories are kind of what I call middle class feel good, sort of like the girls that they wear those sort of like leopard. What's the name of that group of younger, they're multicultural, and they had a TV show for them. The Cheetah Girls, yeah.
Oh yeah, the Cheetah Girls or Gossip Girls, more along those lines. But Sade's Secret is a little bit more gritty. A little bit more urban, I guess would be the word. And, you know, it's challenging to write. The setting is Dallas, Texas. And it was actually, I can't say it was a fun book to write because the subject matter was not fun, because it was a very emotional book to write. I'll put it like that. Because it wasn't a fun book. I enjoyed writing it because the story needs to be told. But it was an emotional book to write.
Yeah. Well, how can readers connect with you on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn if you're on LinkedIn?
If you go to my main website, you can get to both my Twitter and my Facebook account. And my main website is SheilaGoss.com, and that's SheilaGoss.com.
Okay. And what are some of, let's talk about your marketing efforts, because, I mean, you've gone from a lot of times when I'm talking to writers now, a lot of them say, yeah, I see Sheila Goss's name everywhere. So let's talk about your marketing efforts, how you've really gone from, you were out there because you've always been writing magazines and doing different interviews with people, but now it's like your name is a lot out there a lot more because of the, I mean, just the fact that your book was reviewed in the USA Today. Was that the one that it was reviewed in?
Yeah, Rufus was the one that was in USA Today.
Yes, I mean, that's because your name is out there more, so you've really built a wider platform in the last year or two. It's just really blown up. Let's talk about your marketing efforts.
Well, I wish it was like just a trick that I could just say, you know, like, hey, this is what you need to do, because you have to try different things to see if it works. I'm a social media hound, basically. I'm always on Facebook. I love talking to different people. And I don't always just talk about my book. I mean, like tonight, I mean, I love watching Love and Hip Hop. So I have friends on Facebook on Monday nights between 7 and 8 o'clock Central Time. We're discussing what's going on Love and Hip Hop. You know, that's like, you know, I know it's like senseless TV, but, you know, you can't be serious all the time. And it's just like, you know, something I do watch for entertainment. When award shows come on, I usually be on Twitter, and I talk to people on Twitter as we, you know, like, okay, I want this person to win and what this person is wearing. And because I'm an entertainment writer, too. So I like watching different things when it concerns entertainment, whether it's an award show or, you know, one of those shows that they're honoring people, et cetera. So I use Twitter and Facebook. Those are my two forms. There are other social media networks that you can use, but those are the two main ones that I use.
And then you have a pretty big blog, too. I like how you interview people, and you have your blog on a feed where it goes to an email list, right?
Right, and it's you can go to my blog via my website, again, SheilaGoss.com, SHEILAGOSS, and then click on the link that says blog. And I'm an avid reader myself. And if they come to my site, they read my books, and they sign up to my mailing list, more than likely they're avid readers, or they love to read. So I like to present other authors, whether they're popular authors or authors that may not be as well known, and present those authors and their books on my blog. And then you can go, you know, go to my blog and find quite a few authors. This week I highlighted L.D. Hardy. So you can go on there, and if you click on it, I actually posted today, as a matter of fact. And then last week I did Keisha Green, Billy Byer, Angela Michon, as well, you know. So I don't just post about all my books on my blog. I post about other authors, too, because I like to present other authors to, you know, my network of people.
Good. And then the other good thing is, too, see, I've never heard of those authors, and I'm looking for some people to interview. So you can email me at Magto, and I'll go to your website and look at some of the authors.
Yeah, and also Dietrich King Bay, she's on there. I can go, I mean, on and on. Of course, I have, you know, some Letitia Lovey. I love all of her books. I haven't posted Victoria Christopher Miller with Shona Tay Billington's book on there yet, Sinners and Saints, but I will be doing that because I got a chance to go to their book signing here in Shreveport last weekend. The book was very good, so I want to encourage people, you know, to read that. So I'll be highlighting them on my blog coming up as well. So I just, like I said, I love blogging about books. And, you know, most of the ones I blog about are African-American books. However, I read in other, you know, books by everybody, like Sandra Brown. I love Sandra Brown, and I love Daniel Steele. And, of course, you know, I love to be, you know, Jackie Collins. So you'll see other authors as well, but, you know, I really primarily do focus on the African-American writers.
Yes, and it really, and that's a good thing because the truth be known, we didn't have these type of networks. What's really, I think, keeping our books going more than ever before is the power of the Internet and book clubs. We really, there were so many books that went back out of print, and there were books I read as a child or a teenager, and I'm still looking for those books. They went out of print. Now we have Amazon where your book can be out of print and can still be sold, or you can put them in e-books, you know. Let's talk about some of your e-books, Sheila. Let's run down a list of your e-books that are available on Amazon and Smashwords and Barnes & Noble.
Okay, let me think real quick. right now, you can get, like, Love Unexpected, like I said, it's been on Amazon Top 100 for the last year. That was, like, my very first story that I've ever written, and I put it in e-book form, and God has blessed me so with that book, because for the first 6 months, it was, like, in the top three, and then it's dropped down to the top, you know, now it's kind of fluctuating anywhere from the top 20 all the way down to 100, but it's still staying there, so I want to thank the readers out there for that. Another book is The Bad Twin, which is about the twin sisters, the good and the bad twin. Let's see, VIP. If you watch Love and Hip Hop, we all know Olivia's trying to make a comeback. Well, in VIP, my character Paris Mitchell, she's trying to make a comeback, and so that's kind of like my ode to R&B music, because I love music. And then Her Invisible Husband. Her Invisible Man. Mrs. America is another one, and it's about a woman who she becomes Mrs. America but finds out through an article that her husband supposedly cheated on her. And you know, of course, if you want to keep reigning as Mrs. America, you got to be married. So now she has to make a decision. What's more important, being Mrs. America or getting rid of this so-called deadbeat husband? So that was an interesting story. It's a short story. The Candy Shop. And A Forever Love, which was another short story that was originally part of an anthology that never happened. So since the anthology never happened, I decided to release it as a short story, as an ebook. So I have quite a few, you know, ebooks out there.
Mm-hmm. How about some of your rougher ones you want to talk about?
Well, no,
they seem to sell like crazy.
I prefer not to talk about those because
okay,
those are
kind of rough.
And no one knows who that person is. But I can say that under that picture, even though nobody knows who that particular person is, she does sell a lot of e-books. And so,
The ghetto kind of, it's a total different voice that you assume.
It's a totally different voice. And I actually did it as an experiment to see, okay, can I write this type of book? And just put it out there and see what happens. And boy, it exploded. So, but I'm not going to say the pen name because it is a pen name, and it's a purpose for that. and it did explode.
And then I see where they're even asking for more. Oh, when is this and that going to happen? They're waiting on book 3 and 4 in the series. So that's good. But that's good. Writers have to be prolific. You need to experiment with different genres. You cannot just write one thing and. You know, it's a growth thing. The more you write, the better your writing will get, and the more voices you can assume, and the more money and more streams of income. Have you been able to make it? Like, I like the thing of what Jay Conrad said, that you don't have to give out the amount you make, but haven't you had a decent check coming from some?
Well, let me put it like this. I make more money from my e-books than I do with my publisher. So that's pretty much says it all. So I'm able to, that's why I'm able to go to conferences now, because I do have that income coming in.
Right. So. And that's a success. That's what he was saying. You know, he makes a lot. He said he's not telling you to compare yourself to him. He's saying once you start selling even 150 that you can count on a month, that can pay something. That can buy groceries. That can make your life easier. You can say that you're a paid writer. And many of the writers, and he pointed out that a lot of writers have left New York and became self-published, but you haven't seen too many of the self. Now, they picked up the self-published writers who had big book deals, but they're saying that it's not like once a person leaves a legacy publisher and they find out how much more of the money that they can keep, that they're running back to a New York publishing deal, because many of them are finding out it's so much more money versus the 10% that they're making. How much is it now that you can make dependent sometimes up to 70%?
It just depends, because if your ebook is 99 cents, you get 35 cents on that dollar. If it's $2.99, you get 70%, which usually equates to about $2.03 per book. So if it's regardless, $2.99 and up, it's 70% of your sales, ebook sale price. So it just depends.
And then he was saying there are a lot of ways to sell your books to the readers on Amazon. I know they have the Kindle. I haven't joined it yet. Their Kindle newsletter, where you can be featured in that. Then they have a lot of groups that you can talk on Kindle that have built a lot of people's following for their books, because it's mainly the readers. He said you can't expect, the writers are not the ones who are your biggest readers sometimes. A lot of us are sending our books around to other writers.
No, that's the wrong way. Yeah, that's the wrong way, because as a writer, I'm an avid reader. I read a lot of books. However, you don't want to promote to me. You want to promote to the reader, the one that, goes out and they do, we call it one click. They were one click, 100 books in a week if they had the money. Those are the readers that you want to reach out to. Do not promote to another author, because,
right.
Number one, we're trying to work on our own book. And we might not have time to read your book at that time. And don't get upset if we don't, because we're another author just like you. So the best bet, if you want to promote, your time and energy will be best served promoting to reader groups. reading groups and not just, you know, an author.
Right. That was, I really liked his point on that, because for years I was promoting to authors, but it worked out, you know, worked out for my editorial and for my agency. But I, as far as for pushing your books, you have to find your group of readers, people who fall in love, and particularly if you have a series, and now that you have several series, Sheila, that's really building your following for your readers, you know, that they, because they fall in love with the character and they want to see what they're doing. And now you got, and a lot of times I'm finding that different writers did not intend to write a series, but the readers get so wrapped up in the characters, it's like a soap opera, they want you to write some more.
Right, but the good thing about my books, though, even though you can consider them a series, they're actually still standalone books. Even though some of the characters may show up in another book, it's still, you know, they're each still individual standalone books.
Good, but they're kind of interconnected where people are looking for the next one and asking, has anyone asked you any, are you going to do anything else with Ruthless? Have you heard that since, it's only been out a month or so, but has anyone
asked
you? Yeah,
actually someone asked me that last week. If I was going to, Nathan is in here, and one of the other characters, they suggested that they should get together. But I, right now, don't have a plan for Nathan and this other character to get together, but that other character will be in my next Christian fiction book that I'll be writing. Well, you know, of course, I don't have a contract on that one yet, so I don't want to mention the name of it yet. But, yeah, so somebody's already asked me about Nathan.
Well, that's good, you know, and keep reading. I'm so happy we have people who love to read. I was always a reader, but it's good to know that there are people who are not torn between writing and reading. You know, they just love to read, and that's a good thing. And I think for the best movies to me are the ones taken from books. So you, books, we just need stories, and we're in a time now that people need stories to help heal, to uplift them, to give them inspiration. I like how your stories are generally upbeat and you have a good message. What has been some of the feedback on Ruthless?
Well, I've gotten real positive feedback on Ruthless. The only, I guess, basically, I mean, everybody is surprised that I stick so close to the actual biblical story, even though it's a modern-day tale, because, you know, you get the things, you know, of course, the stuff I talk about wasn't happening back in those days, but that's what I think has probably been the most surprising to people, that I actually stuck close to the real story, and also not just that, but I added my own twist to it. So even though you know, if you read the real story, you're still going to be in for a surprise.
Good. Well, Sheila, we're coming up on the top of the hour. Give out your contact information and run through your books again.
Okay, my website is www.SheilaGoss.com. That's SheilaGoss.com. And Ruthless is my current novel based on the story of David and Bathsheba. It's available at all the stores, also online, paperback and Black Expressions in hardcover. Delilah is also available. Savannah's Curse is my suspense novel. It's also available everywhere, as well as I have quite a few ebooks. If you go to my website, SheilaGoss.com, and click on the ebooks link, it will list all of the ebooks I have available that are available on Kindle and Nook, and also at Smashwords for other e-reading devices. And some of my ebooks are The Bad Twin, VIP, Her Invisible Husband, Her Invisible Man, Mrs. America, The Candy Shop, Love Unexpected, and A Forever Love.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Sheila, for coming on the show, and I wish you all the best, and I will have you on when Sade's Secret comes out.
Okay, yeah, and Sade's Secret, that's written under my pen name, Sparkle. So I'm really excited about that book because it did stretch me, because it was a very sensitive subject.
Yes, and then it's going to be under a different publisher, so that's going to be, you know, different, too. That's going to be nice to... because that's a different audience you'll be exposed to, too.
Exactly.
And I was laughing. I said, Sheila, you're going to have to bring it with these, because these books be rough. I had edited a couple of them from prison. I said, oh, my goodness. So you got to get real gritty with this one. And you did, too. And even though it's a young adult.
I enjoyed writing it. like I said, I can't say it's fun because of the subject matter, but it was enjoyable. Yeah, it was painful. It took me through some emotions, and I'm the writer.
So it was painful just to read it, but you know, but I said, but you brought it, because I said, no, you can't be, this can't be nice, and this got to be, this, you're dealing with those, the real gritty writers, and their stories are just fascinating. I think that's why they sell so well. What's the name? Wahida Clark's publishing company. Those stories are really fascinating, because you know, it's things that everybody, you get to go into a world that you don't know about, and that's what you had to do when you wrote that book. You went into the teenagers that don't have Happy Ever After and Sweet 16 Diaries. It's almost like a irony when you had that title. And when you originally had that conception of the book, I think it was going to be just, you know, your average sweet little American girls. But I think that it's good that you're looking at what some teenagers, there are a lot of teenagers that go through a lot, and I'm glad that you're going to cover that in this series versus just have everything all, you know, all in a little pink bow and so sweet. It would be nice. In an ideal world, girls would not get raped or molested, but this is the real world. So I'm glad that you're, you know, expanding and hitting some of the real rougher subjects. And a lot of the young adult books now are much stronger than they used to be. You know, they deal with a lot of things from girls, what is that, when they cut themselves, and you know, they deal with a lot of painful subjects that used to didn't. And then they even had a book, I think that was young adult, where it was teenage prostitute back in the Middle Ages, or you know, it was a historical book, but just showing the things that young teenagers have gone through all through history, and now they're telling more realistic stories instead of stories that teenagers can't relate to. And I think it'll be a big audience for your book too. So let's look forward to that. You think it'll be out by June?
I'm not really sure. I'm hoping by the summer.
Yeah, it probably will be out by June or July. Sade's Secret, so look for it by Sparkle. All right, well, Sheila, I will talk to you later, and have a great evening, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you for having me on the show.
All right, you're welcome. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Talk to you then. Love you all.